So what did we discuss last night?
So he doesn't identify. But for a lesser devotee, not a pure devotee, but lesser, then he will have to suffer. Any other points?
On that point, only Jeev Bhuta suffers. The Jeev Bhuta. Ramuta never suffers. No lament, no desire, no regret.
Any other points?
When the eyes lose their color or form, the optic nerve is dead, and then we are very close to death.
It's one verse.
Yeah.
You can read it.
46 verse. First 46. One with affection of Bhakti Vinod.
So, just to recap, in the beginning of chapter 29, it was mentioned that Devahuti is asking Lord Kapila to describe about devotional service, the suffering of birth and death in the material world, and the time factor. So then in chapter 29, Lord Kapila elaborates upon devotional service, mixed devotional service and then pure devotional service. And then, in the beginning of chapter 30, which is called Adverse Material Activities, then Lord Kapila begins to describe about the suffering of birth and death within this material world, and how the living entity, by performing adverse material activities, has to suffer by going to a hellish situation under the direction of Yamaraj and his superintendents. Then in chapter 31, it is described how the living entity then enters back into the womb of a human mother, but then has to go through the suffering of being in the womb and then praying within the womb if it's a pious soul or a devotee, then coming out of the womb and suffering out of the womb, and then going through childhood and boyhood and youth. And then finally, the end of the chapter, as we discussed last night, discusses how one who is attached to, or Lord Kapila defines that the source of birth and death and suffering in the material world is attachment. And what is the greatest attachment which everyone has in the material world? It is to the opposite sex. So therefore, by being attached to the opposite sex, this is the cause of our birth and death in this material world and our concomitant suffering within this material world. Okay. So therefore, Lord Kapila Dev warns us not to associate, Prabhupada warns us in the prayer words, not to associate loosely or whimsically with the opposite sex. Within ISKCON, which is a spiritual institution, a spiritual society, there must be
segregation
of the sexes. There must be there cannot be free mixing of the sexes, because by free mixing of the sexes, one's spiritual life becomes slackened, or one's strictness or one's determination becomes compromised. Mm-hmm. Like that, one loses one's ability to be very fixed and determined in spiritual life. Now, one becomes unserious about spiritual life by too much attachment to associating with the opposite sex. So Lord Kapila gives us very strong warnings about this. And he defines that this is the cause, that the main cause of bondage within this material world. If one can become detached from this and can ultimately cure one's attachment by becoming attached to the original male-female relationships in the form of the exchanges between, pure exchanges between Radha and Krishna, Krishna and the gopis, then one can become fully purified of this attachment to the material world. Now, tonight we'll begin chapter 32. So in chapter 32, Lord Kapila begins to answer the third question, which is asked by Devahuti, which is, please describe the effects of the time factor. So tonight we'll begin to see what the effects of the time factor are upon the living entity. Mm-hmm. Now, what is chapter 32 called? Entanglement fruitive activity. So in chapter 30, then Lord Kapila Dev described what was chapter 30 called?
Description of
adverse fruitive activities. So adverse fruitive activities cause great bondage within this material world. Now, one performs vikama or ugra karma, very sinful activities, one becomes bound by the sinful reactions which one will receive. Now, in this chapter, Lord Kapila Dev describes the bondage which is caused by pious fruitive activities. Chapter 30 described
adverse.
Yeah, vikama, negative. But these are pious activities, but still they bind exactly the same. You'll become bound to this material world, or attached to the material world. It's the same attachment. One follows an unregulated life. By following unregulated life, or not following Shastra,
so
just trying to enjoy.
That is adverse.
That is chapter 30.
Vikarma.
Yeah, Vikarma. Yeah. In chapter 30, they are following undisciplined or unregulated activities, which are not ordained by Shastra. It's just sense gratification on the level of animals. Then they have to suffer material reactions. But if one performs pious activities, but for sense gratification, for the same sensual pleasure, even though one is unregulated, one is regulated, but still they both bind equally to this material world, because the attachment to sense gratification is exactly the same. It's the same attachment. But one regulates and one is unregulated. Just like one is attached to sex life. So in chapter 30 it describes, if you're attached to sex life in an unregulated way, it binds you into the material world and you have to suffer in hell. But if you're attached to sex life in a regulated way, then you may go to Swarga, you may go to the heavenly planets, where you can enjoy sex unrestrictedly without reaction, right? But it's the same attachment, you're still bound by the material energy.
You're not free from birth and death only.
Yeah, it's still, you're within the samsara chakra. You do not gain release. So it's the same destination, ultimately. You're still within the mahatattva. You're still within the material creation. And you do not gain liberation. So therefore, both of them, in one sense, are equally bad. Of course, on another level, being pious is better, because you're following Vedic instruction. And that regulation and so forth will purify the consciousness to some degree. So that is, but still, it is described that you will be bound by this material energy. So chapter 32, we'll hear about the bondage of pious activities and the effect of the time factor. Actually, it's all under the effect of the time factor. But chapter 32 will describe this effect, how the living entity becomes bound in this way.
In the last class, we discussed that. Three-fourths of the living entities are in the spiritual world, and one-fourth is in the material world. So we understand that the spiritual world is far from the material world. Now, in terms of the material world, do more living entities reside in the higher planetary systems, or more living entities reside in the lower planetary systems? Is there any understanding?
Well, it describes as 3,300 million demigods.
Mm-hmm.
So there's more humans on Earth than there are total demigods. There's not so many up there. Like that, so.
Is that only those who are in charge of something, but maybe there are others who are commenting?
No, there's 33 million in charge of something, and each one has 100 assistants. So that means there's 3,300 million. That's what's described.
Are there residents there?
There's residents.
There are not residents there, because, you know, the Earth is halfway, so it must be half up, half down.
No, because there's Swarga, but then above Swarga, then there is Jana, Tapa, Maha, Satcha. So there's living entities above, up there as well. Seems like most of the population's from here and then downwards. And Deva's more pious birth, so it's not so common like that.
Prabhu, in Bhagavad Gita, in 16th chapter, Krishna speaks about divine and demoniac natures. So this divine means who we should understand? Are they like pure devotees and Krishna conscious followers like that, or it is like Vedic way, just like we are going to discuss today about this entanglement and fruitive activity. So it is said that in Bhagavad Gita, in the beginning of 16th chapter, Prabhupada writes in the support that the main criteria between divine and demoniac, the difference is those who are followers of the scriptures and the people who do not follow the scriptures. That is the main criteria. So here, this chapter which we are going to read, they are following the Vedic way, but for sense gratification. So how do we understand divine means? Is it who is classified under divine according to Krishna's
definition? Means must be theistic. Means you must believe in God. Right? Because Prabhupada makes a statement in the first few purports here. He says that many of the demigod worships are impersonalists or mayavadis. So therefore, that's not really divine. Divine means one must be a devotee. So it means asura. Asura means a deva, a demigod. Now the demigods are all suras. They're all devotees. They may be kama mishra devotee, mean they have some material desire, but they're devotees. They all wear tilak. They all, in the morning, they get up in the heavenly planes, they perform jagya. Their guru is brihaspati. So they have, they are auspicious living entities, they're all devotees of Vishnu, Vaishnavas. So they, therefore they are called divine. And they develop auspicious qualities, as Krishna explains.
He explains first four verses about Abhaya, Sattva, Samshuddha, all this is about the divine qualities. So they are all like demigods and pure devotees.
Yeah, devotees have those qualities. Others have them also, but the qualities are temporary. Whereas the devotee's qualities are considered to be sat or eternal. Like that, so.
The main difference I understood between the divine and demonic is that the divine people believe in the supremacy of the Lord, whereas the demonic don't. They think that they are God themselves. Is that right?
Yeah. Okay. So we'll continue with chapter 32. Entanglement in fruitive activities. The personality of Godhead said, the person who lives in the center of household life derives material benefits by performing religious rituals, and thereby he fulfills his desire for economic development and sense gratification. Again and again he acts the same way. Prima Dhamma.
There are two kinds of householders. One is called Grahamyadi and the others are called Grahasthas. The objective of Grahamyadi is sense gratification and the objective of Grahasthas is self-realization. Here, the Lord is speaking about Grahamyadi, or the person who wants to remain in this material world. His activity is to enjoy material benefits by performing religious rituals for economic development and thereby ultimately satisfy the senses. He does not want anything more. Such a person works very hard throughout his life to become very rich and eat very nicely and drink. By giving some charity for pious activities, he is bound to the higher planetary atmosphere in the heavenly planets in his next life. But he does not want to stop the repetition of birth and death and finish with the commitments, miserable factors of material existence. Such a person is called Grahamyadi. A Grahastha is a person who lives with a family, wife, children, relatives, but has no attachment for them. He prefers to live in a family life rather than as a mendicant or sannyasi. But his chief aim is to achieve self-realization or to come to the standard of Krishna consciousness. Here, however, Lord Kapila Dev is speaking about Grahamyadis who have made their aim the materialistically prosperous life, which they achieve by sacrificial ceremonies, by charities and by good work. They are posted in good positions, and since they know what they are producing of their assets of pious activities, they again and again perform activities of sense gratification. It is said by Prahlad Maharaj, Punaha Punasa Charvita Charvananam. They prefer to achieve that they already achieved. Again and again they experience the material pains, even if they are rich and prosperous, but they do not want to keep on this kind of life.
So what are the points here?
The object of Grahastha is self-realization, and Grahamyadi just involved in the family. That's the main purpose of Grahamyadi.
Yeah, the description of Grahamyadi is that he's quite favorable, he's pious minded, and he's interested in obviously higher status of love, although he sends gratification. His speeches and his girl stars, he's a beautiful transform his girl into girl stars.
Yes.
dharma, artha, and kama, they don't think about the moksha bit.
Yeah, that's a good point. So Prabhupada points out that the griha meti. Meti means the center. So the griha becomes the center of one's consciousness. Now, their consciousness is that they... Center. So the griha meti means the center of his consciousness is his griha, which means his home. So their main emphasis is on dharma, artha and karma, the purusharthas, which means the goals of life, which are described in the Vedas. Dharma, artha, karma and moksha, like that. So dharma means regulated activities, which is spoken about in the Vedas. Now the Vedas is a very vast body of work. It is huge, Vedic literature, what we call the Vedas. We don't even have them all now. Many sections are missing and so forth like that. But what was originally there, which Vyasadeva first compiled, was a huge body of work. And it says that 96% of that is karma kanda, which means it is fruitive. It describes dharma. Dharma means how to perform pious activity. Because by performing pious activity, then you receive punya. Punya means...
pious credits,
yeah, like that. That you become awarded or rewarded for your piety. Which means then, if you worship particular devas, then, as Prabhupada describes, you will get intelligence, or if you worship particular devas, you'll get health, or you'll get a good spouse. So this is the motivation of many people. You perform dharma, and you give charity, you perform good activities, right? You perform some tapasya, some austerity, like that. You do sacrifices, and in this way you worship particular devas, you please them, and then by their pleasure, then you receive the reward of your desired object. You worship Saraswati, you become more intelligent, more learned, and your memory becomes very powerful, just like Keshava Kashmiri. he was the greatest devotee of Saraswati. Yeah. He was the greatest devotee of Saraswati. And he worshipped Saraswati so perfectly that she appeared before him and she said that whenever you speak, I will enter onto your tongue. So then he was speaking so eloquently. He was such a powerful speaker and such a learned person, and he memorized volumes of Vedic literature. So he became very proud by his learning, and he began to travel around India as a Digvijay, a Raj Pandit, on the back of an elephant, traveling around. And he would travel all over India, and then he would meet the different scholars, the pundits, and he would defeat them. And when he defeated them, they had to sign how would you say it?
Declaration.
They had to sign the declaration saying that I was defeated by this person, now I've become his follower. So he was defeating everyone. So then he came to Navadvip, and back in those days, Navadvip was considered to be the seat of learning in all of India. But when they heard Keshava Kashmir is coming, everyone was in fear. Everyone was just talking, he's coming, and he's going to defeat us. We're going to lose our reputation. What can we do? So then he came, he arrived. And in the evening, because he just arrived on the outskirts of Navadvip, in the evening, he was walking along the Ganga. And as he's walking along the Ganga, then he came across a group of students who were sitting with their teacher, who was a young boy, whose name was Nimai Pandit. So Keshava Kashmiri took bath in the Ganga, and he purified himself. After being purified by Mother Ganga, it was a very serene, very beautiful atmosphere. And then he came, and he said to some of the students who were listening to this person, and then he looked at this boy, and he thought, what an amazing personality. How beautiful this boy is. And how learned and how sweetly he is speaking. And he has such a deep voice and so captivating. He's so learned. And they, he said, who is this boy? Who is this scholar? And they said, his name is Nimai Pandit. And he was famous. Nimai was famous by that stage. He was a famous scholar. So he said, oh, this is Nimai Pandit. He became very, he was very attracted to him. So he walked into the center of the students, and Nimai Pandit looked at him, and Nimai said, and he said, who are you? And he said, I am Keshava Kashmiri. He said, oh, the great Keshava Kashmiri has come. He said, please sit. So Keshava Kashmiri was there, and then he said, you are such a, Nimai Pandit said, you are such a learned scholar. Now please, please recite for us the glories of Mother Ganga. So being very proud of his learning, then off the top of his tongue, just like the wind was flowing, he began to recite 100 verses in glorification of Mother Ganga spontaneously. Very intricate Sanskrit verses like that. And everyone was just captivated and amazed that this person was so eloquent in speaking. Saraswati, he was famous, Saraswati herself was on his tongue. So at the end of the recital, then Nimai Pandit said, we've never met a scholar like you. Please, for our benefit, point out to us what are the embellishments or the good points within this, within what you have spoken, and also please point out the faults for our benefit so that we may learn. And he was very taken aback. He said, faults? He said, what faults are in the... And he said, please, take some. Please tell us the embellishments and the faults. And then Nimai Pandit said, he said, please tell us, he said, what faults are there? He said, you please, he said to Nimai Pandit, you please tell me, what are the faults? And Nimai Pandit said, in the 64th shloka, and Keshava Kashmiri was struck. He said, how could he even remember? I just spoke them like the wind. He said, in the 64th shloka, and then he recited that shloka, and he said, there are 5 faults. Right? And then he said, this fault is the fault of redundancy. You've mentioned this particular verse, but this particular word is redundant because you've already used a similar word earlier in the sentence, so you're using it again. This is redundant. He pointed out 5 faults. And then, after hearing that, and then he said to Keshava Kashmiri, what do you think? And Keshava Kashmiri, he just went... He couldn't speak. Because Saraswati would not stand before her Lord. She would not speak before her Lord, because she is the goddess of learning. She is a devotee of the Lord. So therefore, she would not stand in front of the Lord. Out of humility, she stood back. So she wasn't on his tongue, so he couldn't say anything. So then Nimai said, that's okay. He said, yeah, tomorrow you can come back. He said, you go and study your books. And he said, tomorrow you come back and you can teach us something. So because he was so learned, but he didn't feel Keshava Kashmiri, even though he'd been totally humiliated. But he was done. It was done in such a perfect way by the Lord that he did not feel that the Lord had personally insulted him. But his pride had been fully crushed by the Lord. So then he went away, and then in the evening he was praying to Saraswati. He said, Why have you done this to me? I'm your devotee. Why did you leave me? And then in the dream she came and she said, I cannot stand before this person. He is the Lord. You should go and bow to him tomorrow and surrender to him. So the next day Keshava Kashmiri came to him and he said, I understand now who you are and I'm surrendered to you. And Lord Chaitanya said, yes, it is correct. What you're saying is correct, but do not tell anyone who I am. Because my pastimes are chana. They're hidden. So do not tell anyone. So they worship different devas to get learning or to get a beautiful spouse or to get intelligence or wealth or material prosperity or to enter the heavenly planets. And the devas can give those things, but the point is that these benedictions are simply binding one into the material world. You're still attached to sense gratification. So they perform dharma. Dharma means... regulated pious activities. Right? And what is the point of performing dharma? So that you can achieve artha. Artha means some wealth. Because with wealth, then you can enjoy karma. Karma means sense gratification. So these days in the modern world, because the modern world is no longer Vedic, then people are performing all activities just for artha. Money has become God. Money is worshipped as being supreme. So therefore, they perform activities but without dharma. There's not piety to attain their wealth. They attain the wealth through unregulated, impious methods. And in this way they get sinful, ugra-karmic, vikarmic reactions like that. So their desire is they perform their dharma so that they can attain artha, so they can enjoy karma, or sense gratification. And then the fourth, this is not what the Griha Medis are interested in, but then 96% of the Vedas is describing Karmakanda, and then 4% is describing Jnanakanda, the Upanishads and so forth. So Jnanakanda means the philosophical part of the Vedas, which discusses moksha as being the goal of life, to attain liberation. So when one becomes fed up with dharma, artha, karma, then one may desire moksha. So this is what the Vedas are describing, these four items like that. But Mahaprabhu has taught that the fifth Purushartha, or the actual goal of the Vedas, is prema pumata mahan. The great goal of the Vedas for all of humanity is prema. That is the fifth goal of the Vedas. That is the hidden goal of the Vedas. That is the actual goal of the Vedas. So Griha Medhi is one who is attached to sense gratification. But a Grihastha is one who is, as Prabhupada describes in the second paragraph, his main aim is to achieve Krishna consciousness. That is the goal of the Grihastha. As Prabhupada mentions in the...
In the second canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, Medhi means the main meaning they have given as envious. Second canto, you know, first five verses of the second canto, Deha Patya Kalatra Adishni, that area, the Prabhupada is given, Griha Medhi means, envious.
Envious person. Like that. Yeah, I heard Komal Prabhu one time describe it meaning like, Medhi meaning like the central point or the pivot. Of that.
Yeah,
and one who is like that, then he becomes envious of others. That's what the Bhagavad Gita describes in the beginning of the second canto. So Srila Prabhupada says that a Grihastha is a person who lives with family, but he has no attachment to them. He prefers to live in family life rather than as a mendicant or a sannyasi, but his chief aim is to attain Krishna consciousness. So that is what a Grihastha's life is. Grihastha means we live in the material world. Right? We have marriage, we have children, we have family, we have home, griha. But it is ashraya, it is ashrama. It is a place of shelter, and our main aim is to become Krishna conscious. Right? To become fully dedicated to our deity, to our ishtadev, to Krishna. And in this way then we attain liberation, which is the fifth goal of life, to develop prema, bhakti.
Griha Medis primarily focuses on dharma and karma, and those who do not follow the Vedic ways and are still attached to it, to be born by their children and birth, what is enough for them?
What's the difference?
What is the term for them?
Yeah, but what's the...
What should you call them?
As opposed to what?
Dhamma.
Here the Lord is speaking about the Griha Medhi, or the person who wants to enjoy or remain, who wants to remain in the material world. So Griha Medhi means one who wants to remain in the material world. One may be pious, one may be impious. For the Griha Medhi. But one is pious, one is impious.
But I think
assuming, isn't it? Demoniac, because they're not following any scriptures and living only for the satisfaction of the senses.
Yeah, one follows Varnashram Dharma, and one is Asuric, which means he does not follow any principle.
Mm-hmm.
That's all.
One who is a devotee in this sense, who is doing the pious activity, has more chances to get detached and go and seek moksha.
Yeah.
Whereas the others, they don't have that chance.
Yeah.
But still, Gramedis are better if you see the modern age people who don't live in at least family life.
Yeah,
so they are even, I would say, worse than Gramedis.
Mm.
At least they have the extended consciousness towards their family members. Prabhupada says, like self, like animals, but extended consciousness, my family, my wife, my children. So at least they are doing justice towards their family, and looking after them.
Yeah, so it's better to be regulated than unregulated. But it's better to be a devotee, that's the best. Such persons are ever bereft of devotional service due to being too attached to sense gratification. And therefore, although they perform various kinds of sacrifices and take vows, great vows to satisfy the demigods and forefathers, they are not interested in Krishna consciousness, devotional service. So, Brahmana Prabhu, would you like to read
that? In Bhagavad Gita 7.20, it said that persons who worship demigods have lost their intelligence. Kamas chaste shruta jnana. They are much attracted to sense gratification and therefore they worship the demigods. It is of course recommended in Vedic scriptures that if one wants money, health or education, then he should worship the various demigods. A materialistic person has manifold demands and thus there are manifold demigods to satisfy his senses. The Grihamedis who want to continue a prosperous materialistic way of life generally worship the demigods or the forefathers by offering the pinda or respective oblations. Such persons are bereft of Krishna consciousness and are not interested in devotional service to the Lord. The kind of so-called pious and religious man is the result of impersonalism. The impersonalists maintain that the supreme absolute truth has no form and that one can imagine any form he likes for his benefit and worship in that way. Therefore, the Brahmanis or materialistic men say that they can worship any form of demigod or worship of the Supreme Lord. Sorry, as worship of the Supreme Lord. Especially among the Hindus, those who are meat eaters prefer to worship goddess Kali, because it is described that one can sacrifice a goat before that goddess. They maintain that whether one worships the goddess Kali or Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu or any demigod, the destination is the same.
Mm-hmm.
This is first class rascalism and such people are misled. But they prefer this philosophy. Bhagavad Gita does not accept such rascalism and it is clearly stated that such methods are meant for persons who have lost their intelligence. The same judgment is confirmed here and the word Kama Muda, meaning one who has lost his sense or is infatuated by the lust of attraction for sense gratification, is used.
Mm-hmm.
Kama Mudas are bereft of Krishna consciousness and devotional service and are infatuated by a strong desire for sense gratification. The worshippers of demigods are condemned both in Bhagavad Gita and in Srimad Bhagavatam.
Mm. So what points do we have?
Oh, I heard a story about there were two types of students who actually approach a teacher and then dancing. And one says, I know a little bit, and the other one says, I don't know anything. And when this comes to mind where basically the person who says, I know a little bit of dancing, the teacher says that I'll charge you more than the person who doesn't. And these people who actually fall into that category are the people who actually worship demigods, who actually take the same concept that Krishna is on the same level, and they don't want to even think about anything else. It's more difficult to preach to them, I suppose, than to a person who doesn't know.
Because one person is contaminated by karma and one is contaminated by jnana. But of the two, then the contamination of jnana is worse, because it is easier to free one from their attachment to sense gratification than it is to free one from the impersonalistic conception that he has got. So it becomes even harder to preach to those people. Because if someone's attached to sense gratification, then you can preach to them, take them time, but you can preach. If someone thinks they're God, then it's very difficult to preach.
So if someone receives a certain love with an objective of dharma and karma, is it still called a green movie?
Yeah. Agama sarva kama wa mokshi kama wa
dada. No, it's not a griha maybe. Because he's approaching Krishna.
But his maybe center is still griha. But he tries to achieve the griha or his center.
But he approaches Krishna. So therefore, if he has faith that Krishna is God, he is supreme, then he is grihasta to some degree.
I think it's a matter of time.
Yeah, definitely a matter of time.
He's on the right path. So grihasta with a lower consciousness.
Yeah, maybe grihasta who is difficulty following the principles and so forth, but still he accepts Krishna and then he's
but
a devotee.
Krishna
says he's my devotee.
So it's not just very much dharma or kama, but the means to realize this goal, isn't it?
In 7th chapter, 18th verse, Krishna says, Udhava Sarvaivaita Jnani Pratham. Undoubtedly, all these devotees are of magnanimous souls, because even though they have some desire, they have come to me instead of going somewhere else. Hmm. No, he says.
What do you mean?
It is not basically the Mary which he finds a girl Mary, it is the process by which he tries to achieve those goals, isn't it? Like if he's worshipping one of the demigods and his goal is dharma, karma, then he's a dharmati. But if he's worshipping Krishna, although his center is griha or whatever, he's still a grihastha.
Yeah, he's a grihastha, but then he's, yeah, he may not be able to follow everything immediately like that. The most important point is that he's a devotee, because he accepts Krishna as being supreme.
So the yoga ladder, he comes as the Krishna Bhakta, isn't it? Like with the
Sakama.
So, but he's still a devotee, but he's Sakama.
Yeah, definitely Sakama.
And as he does, he'll progress to Nishkama like that.
Yeah, he will gradually progress. So it means that Krishna says in the end of the 9th chapter of the Gita, the whole end of the 9th chapter of the Gita, Krishna declares many verses where he says that, declare it boldly, Arjuna, and my devotee will never perish. So even if the person cannot follow properly. Just like Radhana Swami was telling one story, there was one of the pandas in Puri, and his seva, I think that he was one. No, it was not Mahaprabhu's time, it was more recently, but his seva was on the Rath Yatra day with the other pandas. They would carry Jagannath through his cart. That's their particular seva. Each group has their particular seva, which they're friendly to Jagannath. But he was attached to a particular prostitute. So the night before the Rath Yatra, then he stayed up all night with a prostitute. And then at the end of the night, he walked to the beach and he fell asleep on the beach. And then he woke up in the morning and the sun was up. And then he was sorry, and then he took bath and then ran towards the Rath Yatra. The crowd was there and Jagannath had already entered onto his cart, and he missed the whole opportunity. And he was so angry and so upset with Jagannath that he had not woken him to go and do his service, that he went back to the beach and he made a Ratha Yatra out of sand. He made a Ratha cart out of sand. And he was just sitting there and he was crying and he was just meditating and he was so fixed. That because Jagannath had not let him do his seva, that he was, even though he'd done such an abominable activity like that. Now, I can't remember how the pastime unfolds, but he gets some sign from Jagannath directly. And Jagannath says, I accept you, you're my devotee. Like that. So even though the devotee, Krishna says in the Gita, you may perform the most abominable activity, but still you're considered to be Satan in Krishna's eyes. So he's the devotee, that's the important thing. Yeah, he had his repentance like that. So.
Well, correctly, it's just my understanding. The major difference between, like, say, Grahamedis and Grahasthas is in their degree of passion. Because Grahamedis, in spite of these ups and downs of this material life, they want to stay there and just say, okay, the good time will be there back and I will be doing the same thing again. So this spirit of fighting against this material ups and downs just because of mode of passion. Whereas Grahasthas, they take it the simplistic way, like in the mode of goodness, and they didn't try to reinvent the wheel, okay, this is not the way to go, and they just try to take a path in which they reduce all these activities and slowly get them away from this material attachment. So is that the mode of passion that's driving the two separate streams?
No, not necessarily. The devotees are under the mode of passion also. We're affected by the mode of passion also. It's not that when someone's a grihastha, they become free from the mode of passion.
So my question is then, what keeps them, like, they don't want to come out of this? So why?
Because they're attached to the desire to enjoy separately from Krishna.
And that's again the function of?
It's under the influence of mode of passion, Maya, like that. It means that they're in the material world and they have that desire to enjoy, but they're still attached to Dharma, Artha and Karma. When someone becomes a little experienced in the material world, then they desire moksha. And when someone's very fortunate, then they get the opportunity to learn from a devotee about bhakti, which is the actual purpose of the Vedas.
Like, there are so many books, well, just material books, they say never give up. So they just try to, like Edison, for example, they just make a point, the good time will be there. So even if things are not going your way, just stay there. So that's like more of passion, I think. Whereas the devotee, they take, they very quickly get frustrated, well, this is not, I think we have to go for some permanent solutions.
Yeah, realization has to develop over time. It's not entirely, it's related to the modes, but it's not entirely based upon the modes.
But one thing, Prabhu, this 96% of the Vedas are talking about Karmakanda and 4% of Jnanakanda. Then Bhakti is very, like, difficult. That's why it's not much stressed in the thing. Of course, ultimate goal is Bhakti, but more of this 96% is on Karmakanda. That's why people are so fixed in the misconception.
Yeah, because, like, man proposes, God disposes. So the living entity wants to enjoy separately from Krishna.
Mm.
So then the Vedas are there. Nishtraguna Bhavajuna. Mm. Krishna says most of the Vedas deal with the modes.
It's more
right? Because the living entities want to be separate from Krishna. So Krishna then facilitates. You want to be separate, then
in the form of Vedas, essence gratification, gradual purification, and go back.
Yeah, because at least it's Vedic, and then they get benefit.
Mm.
Because they're following regulation, and then if they come in contact with a devotee, see, it all comes down to one point, right? Coming in contact with a devotee. That's what changes the destiny.
Yeah.
So that's why.
Then with a car at the front, someone's getting their car towed away.
Yep.
The RABC or whoever it is, council, taking the car away.
Well, Or then just take your car away.
It's parked legally, so it shouldn't happen.
How can we park? Yeah.
Well, it's in a 1 hour slot, so.
Yogi. Tell him when we come back, huh, Yogi? It's probably my car. But the point is, it doesn't matter if they take your car, you should not leave Bhagavatam. That's the point. Just like there was the story of Janak Maharaj. His treasury was burning down, but he didn't leave the Bhagavatam.
Protection.
Krishna will take it. Let them have the car, but we'll hear the Bhagavatam. That's the point. So the most advanced devotees, they stay.
Look, I'm the last, that's the car.
It's either the devotees who are the most advanced state or the ones who did not have a car.
All of those spouses are taking care of.
It's better not to have a car.
Yeah, then you don't have to worry. That's why the Vedas speak about renunciation. Because if you don't have it, you don't have to worry about
no
it.
Worries.
If you have it, then.
That's baggage.
Big problem.
Nothing else, I see this is throwing the leader in the car away for some reason. Some people think of you, Papa, or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, why would they come and just take the car?
Maybe.
They're in a 1 hour flood.
Yeah. People that just come and just take the car. That's the reason why.
I think that car is not working. You're not excited.
Maybe some car is not working. Yes.
Open car.
What is saying? I mean,
it's full of real enemies.
Is everyone back? So you know the story of Janak Maharaj, which I told previously. Janak Maharaj and all the sages, they were listening to the Bhagavatam, and the sages, they criticized Janak Maharaj. Just look, he is such a king. He has so much opulence. We are sages. We are detached. So then the devotee who was speaking the Bhagavatam, then he said to some other devotees, he said, when we're speaking Bhagavatam, then you go and you steal all the kopins from the sages' cottages, from the hermitages. So then, when someone came, they were listening to Bhagavatam, and then someone ran in and they said to all the sages, they said, someone is stealing all your things from your hermitage. They all got up and they ran out. Right? And then later they came back to hear the Bhagavatam. But then Janak Maharaj, they've been criticizing Janak Maharaj because he was so opulent and everything. And then his treasury caught on fire. So then one of his soldiers, they came and they said, your treasury is on fire, Janak Maharaj. And Janak Maharaj just said, just go and take care of it. So I'm hearing the Bhagavatam. I'm peaceful. You go and take care of it like that. He didn't leave. So even though he was appeared to be more materially involved, but actually he had more devotion than the sages. So we should not become distracted by these material.
We'll talk about this story to break the rule.
Okay, so let us continue.
I want to make a point for this. In India, it's really a pity they don't get the knowledge. Like many people, even though they're born in the Vaishnava family, they treat all demigods and Vishnu as the same. It's a pity. I mean, even though they have all the upbringing, it's I don't know why they don't get. Those days they had like discourses and lectures in the evening every day. These days it's very, very hard to find, and they don't get the knowledge. It's very pretty. And apparently these days, previously on televisions they never used to advertise any of the meat products. Now they are advertising with companies saying this is the vegetarian and this and all that. It's become so degraded that it's unbelievable. It's a pity that it's getting more worse and worse.
Kali Yuga is becoming more powerful.
And
so
it's ignorance, I think.
Yep.
Ignorance, and there's no initiate. I mean, like a kind of a desire or to get such knowledge.
Mm.
Yeah, that's why Prabhupada wanted to preach to the leaders, because if you preach to the leaders, then they can change the situation. Okay. So it's being described here that if one worships all these devas to achieve his material goals, it is some, very often it's impersonalism, because they're thinking that you can worship any god, and this god, it doesn't matter which god you worship, they're all the same, and ultimately it's all going to the same destination, and they can all fulfill your desires, and it's an impersonalism. It's a very dangerous concept. And it is what keeps one bound within this material world. Karma and jnana. This is what keeps one away from bhakti. So therefore one cannot take to bhakti if one is too much attached to karma or jnana. And if one is too much attached to sense gratification or mental speculation, he cannot become a devotee. A devotee can only, or someone can only become a devotee when they are sufficiently detached from karma and jnana. Otherwise, very difficult to take to devotional service. Such materialistic persons, attracted by sense gratification and devoted to the forefathers and demigods, can be elevated to the moon, where they drink an extract of the soma plant. They again return to this planet. So, as Kapila Deva is pointing out, what is the use of trying to worship a deva? What is the use of trying to attain a heavenly planet when you simply have to come back to earth at the end of your life? You go for so many thousands of years, 10,000 years of earth time, to the moon planet, but when your pious credits are finished, simply you come back. Just like you go to Bali or to Tahiti or to Vanuatu or to any of that. But then when you run out of money, then you come back.
There is way like that up and down.
Yeah. So every situation is temporary in the material world. Kapila Deva is simply warning us. It is temporary. You go to the heavenly planets, but then what is the point? Because then simply you'll just come back again to a lower birth. So then what did you achieve? So he's pointing out that everything is temporary in this material world. So therefore, people, they worship the demigods, they perform pious activities, but there's no difference to, I mean, it's different, but it's, you're still trapped just as someone is performing impious activity. They're trapped within the material world. You perform piety, you go up, and then you come down again. So you don't really achieve so much. No, it is not mentioned like that. Yeah, it's always mentioned that you come back to earth. It doesn't say. Unless you make spiritual progress. But Srila Prabhupada generally describes that you do not make progress because you become very bewildered. So it's very hard to become buddhi. Very hard to become fixed when you're in too much sense gratification. Like that.
I understand about the demigod worship, but isn't it necessary to do the sacrifice, the oblations to the forefathers? Because it is for their benefit to. I think, didn't Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and others perform this Shraddha ceremony? They do, so it is necessary?
It's different. We do these things just like when you go to Mayapur, then Jnanivas Prabhu and Pankajangri Prabhu, they do these ceremonies for the devotees. And in the Gaupadeen festival, Jayapataka Swami has one day where they do the ceremony for the departed souls, because all the devotees come. Then out of thousands of devotees, there may be 40, 50 or more who have ashes that they need to put, so they do it all at once. So you do all these activities and but it's different. I mean, when the devotees do it, then the ultimate goal is bhakti. That means that you're trying to elevate the soul to a devotional level. So then, you offer prasad and so forth, but it is prasad of Vishnu, as Prasada Radha Madhava, like that. So you're doing the whole activity, putting them in the Ganga by devotees. And so it's not that you're just doing it for pious reasons, but you're doing it to try to spiritually benefit the departed soul. That's the point. So you might do the activities, but the motive is different. Like that.
Oh, I was just hearing a class in which it is saying, I can't remember who is the Maharaj. He says that if you are a pure devotee, then there is no need for you to perform this activity. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did this to set an example. Devotees in general should follow the Vedic intentions because they are not purely in their initial stage. Because Mahaprabhu didn't do it. Mahaprabhu was on a different platform. And if you attain that level of maturity, it's not required. But because most of the devotees are still basically in transit to that stage, they should still perform all these rites. That was explanation given in the Maharaj.
And as is pointed out by Rupa Goswami, and maybe in the commentary by Jiva Goswami, Nectar Devotion, one should not allow one's bhakti to be covered. That's the point. Because people perform activities, you know, rituals and so forth, but their bhakti becomes covered, and it just becomes ritualistic.
Mm.
But for devotees, it should never become ritualistic. You know, it's always with prayers to the deities and so forth. Everything we do, then our motive is not to, you know, just elevate the person, you know, on a pious level. But it's to benefit them spiritually. So that's the motivation is always different with the devotees.
In Gita also Krishna says Sedate Moha Kalilam, but the devotees become indifferent to the ritualistic because they have devotion to the Lord, become indifferent to the ritualistic elements of life like that. When the intelligent has passed out of the dense forest of delusion, he shall become indifferent to all this ritualistic.
Different rituals. All the planets of the materialistic persons, including all the heavenly planets such as the moon, are vanquished when the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari, goes to his bed of serpents, which is known as Ananta Shesha. So this is the description that Devahuti has asked in the beginning of the 29th chapter about the
time factor.
So this is the description of time. Krishna says, Kalasmi, I am time, the great destroyer of the worlds, and I have come to destroy everyone. Except for you Pandavas, everyone shall be destroyed. So this is the nature of time. Everything becomes destroyed in the material world. So you go to the highest planet in the material world, to the lowest planet in the material world, you'll be under the influence of time. And under the influence of time, then you'll simply be destroyed in due course of time. That is the nature of time. Therefore, devotees don't get so worried about material things, material acquisition. We don't waste our time on these things because it's all temporary. You know, Bhagavatam says, just live a healthy life. Keep your body and soul together. That is enough. Like that. And concentrate on Krishna consciousness. Just like the oldest sage in the universe, every time one of his hairs would drop out, every time one of Lord Brahma's lives would pass. So then,
Lomash.
So then, his disciple said, Guru Maharaj, do you need a bhajan kutia? He said, what for? Life is temporary. That is self-realization. Those who are intelligent and are of purified consciousness are completely satisfied in Krishna consciousness. Freed from the modes of material nature, they do not act for sense gratification. Rather, since they are situated in their own occupational duties, they act as one is expected to act. So, a devotee does not act for sense gratification. A devotee acts for the pleasure of Krishna. That is the difference in the consciousness. The non-devotees, they're always acting for sense gratification. That is their motivation. But for the devotees, they're only acting for Krishna's satisfaction. Therefore, they don't become bound by the material energy in the same way as the non-devotees are bound by the material energy, because their motivation is that they just want to enjoy. Therefore, they are under the influence of the time factor. They have to undergo birth and death. Whereas the devotees, they're interested in serving Krishna. So therefore, they're not under the influence of the time factor, they're not under the influence of birth and death. They can transcend this world. So therefore, we have to reach the platform of pure devotional service. That is our goal in life. By executing one's occupational duties, acting with detachment and without a sense of proprietorship or false egoism, one is posted in one's constitutional position by dint of complete purification of consciousness. And by thus executing the so-called material duties, he can easily enter into the kingdom of God. So Prabhupada mentions within the purport the difference between Nivritti Dharma and Pravritti Dharma. So Pravritti, Pravritti means you're performing Dharma but with attachments. Regulations, everything that's been described so far, worshipping demigods to get pious results. This is Pravritti Dharma. You're performing Dharma or regulation. Dharma means to follow the rules of God. So therefore you're following, but the whole desire is to get something material, vanic mentality, of being in a mercantile exchange with God. But Nivritti means without attachment. You follow Dharma, but with a spirit of detachment. Prabhupada mentions in the purport, here the word Nivritti Dharma, Nirata, means constantly engaging in executing religious activities for detachment. Because the devotee is not attached to enjoying in the material world, he is attached to giving Krishna pleasure. Nirbandha, Krishna Sambandhe, Yukta Vairagya, Uchite. This is Nivritti Marg. This is detachment. Devotees are detached. Means they're not attached to sense gratification. If something can be used in relationship to Krishna, we accept it. If it cannot be used in relation to Krishna, then we reject it. That is Nivritti. That means practicing religious life to attain Krishna consciousness. It means with detachment.
Even Bhagavatam, beginning second verse, dharma prochita taitava parama, or taitava dharma has to be given up.
Bhagavatam rejects this. Gita finishes saying sava dharma parijaja. Bhagavatam begins by saying kaitava dharma. All this must be rejected. Yeah, so where the Gita finishes, then Bhagavatam will elaborate. I think so. Through the path of illumination, such liberated persons approach the complete personality of Godhead, who is the proprietor of the material and spiritual worlds and is the supreme cause of their manifestation and dissolution. Worshippers of the Hiranyagarbha expansion of the personality of Godhead remain within the material world until the end of two paratas, when Lord Brahma also dies. So Prabhupada points out within the purport that the verse mentions that particular devotees, they worship Garbhadakshaya Vishnu. Now if you worship Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, then Prabhupada describes in the purport, you have to stay within the material world until the end of Brahma's life. And then at that time, being an associate of Lord Brahma in such a loka, then you can transcend and go back to the spiritual world. But if you worship Krishna, or one of Krishna's expansions, then by that worship you can go to the particular planet according to the particular Ishtadeva or the deity that you're worshipping. So if you worship Krishna, you can go to Goloka, Vrindavan. If you worship Lord Ram, you go to Ayodhya. If you worship Nisringa, you go to a particular planet in Vaikuntha, where Nisringa resides eternally. So, Prabhupada points out that all of Krishna's incarnations are within Krishna. And the Bhagavatam is pointing us to worship Krishna directly. Because by worshipping Krishna, Mahaprabhu, then you attain Goloka Vrindavan. Not that. But the point is that in general, which is being made, is that by worshipping any of the incarnations, then you go to that particular place where that incarnation eternally resides. But if you worship Gavadaksha Vishnu, you'll just stay within the material world as a devotee until you get to the point where Lord Brahma finishes the universe, and then you can transcend into Vaikuntha. Just a slight technical point.
Yeah, because then with Brahma, they are all elevated to the spiritual kingdom, right? But Brahma also has to take birth in the material world, right?
Who?
Brahma. Brahma Bhuvana Loka, he also has to keep take repeated births. So even if he goes into Gaurudaksha Vishnu, he has to come out again. Right?
Different Brahma.
Sorry?
Different Brahma.
Different.
Not the same jiva.
Oh, okay.
Not that. After experiencing the inhabitable time of the three modes of material nature known as two puratas, Lord Brahma closes the material universe, which is covered by layers of earth, water, air, fire, air, ether, mind, ego, etc., and goes back to Godhead. So then, Lord, then Prabhupada points out, as has been pointed out in the Bhagavatam, that at the end of Brahma's life, then Lord Brahma and any of his associates who are pure Vaishnavas, then they go back to the spiritual world. But sometimes Lord Brahma is not a pure devotee. So then if he is not a pure devotee and all the others who are associated with him also do not attain pure devotional service, they don't go back to the spiritual world. But if he's, quite often he is a pure devotee, just like right now, our particular Lord Brahma is a pure devotee. So if you get his association, then you can also become completely purified. At the end of his life, which is about halfway through, he's about 50 at the moment. So at the end of his life, then you'll go back to Goloka Vrindavan also with him. Or you can just chant Hare Krishna and go back in this life. The yogis who become detached from the material world by practice of breathing exercises and control of the mind reach the planet of Brahma, which is far, far away. After giving up their bodies, they enter into the body of Lord Brahma, and therefore, when Brahma is liberated and goes to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the Supreme Brahman, such yogis can also enter into the kingdom of God. So Srila Prabhupada points out, as Krishna points out in the Bhagavad Gita, those who worship devas, they go to the planets of the devas. And if you go to the planets of the devas, you have to return again to this earthly realm. But those who go to, who worship Krishna, or one of Krishna's incarnations, then they go to the eternal abode, Vaikuntha. And Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, once returning, then you never return again into this world. Okay. So it's just the whole point that Kapila Dev is making is that although it's pious to worship the devas, but it doesn't solve anything. You simply come back into this material world again and again and again. So Shrama Eva Hi Kevalam, useless, waste of time. And final verse for tonight. Therefore, my dear mother, by devotional service, take direct shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is situated in everyone's heart. So he says to Devahuti, take to the direct path. The direct path is
bhakti.
This is the direct path. You don't have to take to another path. Now, as Prabhupada points out in the purport, the point of performing bhakti yoga is that you perform sadhana bhakti to reach the platform of sadhya. Sadhya means perfection. So perfection means to serve Krishna in your eternal relationship with Krishna in one of the five different rasas. That is sadhya, that is perfection. So we're performing our sadhana to reach to that point. So he's saying to Devahuti, perform bhakti. That's how you attain perfection. But then he points out, you've already attained perfection, because the Lord is your son, which is one of the eternal rasas. So therefore you're already liberated. If you're attached to the Lord, then in one of these eternal relationships, this is perfection. If you serve the Lord in that relationship, that natural relationship of being the mother, of being the friend, of being the lover, of being the servant, then in this way you are performing the perfectional, you're in the perfectional position of serving the Lord in your eternal relationship with the Lord. That is the goal of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So he says to Devahuti, this is the goal, pure devotional service in one of these eternal rasas. And since you're already my mother, you're perfect. So nothing more needs to be said. Like that. So then he will continue next week. Monday is Radhashtami. So we won't have class on Radhashtami because we'll all be here at the festival. So we won't have class. Tuesday will continue. And then by the end of this month, we just began September, then by the end of the month, we will probably finish the third canto. And very beginning of October, we'll have the final exam. And then I'll mark the exams, and that will be it for this year. Yeah, I'm thinking we'll do something, because I don't go to India until like October 25th.
Okay.
So probably up until close to when I go, then I'll try to keep doing classes. Up until. But I think we'll finish Bhagavatam by the end of this month, and then we'll start maybe some Madhuri Kandini or something like that. Up until when I'm going to India. Brahma Samhita is too big. Brahma Samhita is a whole course. I can't do it in a few weeks. Brahma Samhita takes, 30 classes or something to do it. It's a very involved scripture. Okay, so, yeah, can't do it by Brahma Samhita. Have to work out some other way. Okay, we'll stop there. So next week we'll continue chapter 32. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.